The Vintage Gamer, Episode 24. Tom Clancy's Politica, Part 1. The Good Stuff.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network. GBNcom.com.
Hello and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. As always, this podcast is available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. So this week and next week, I'm going to try to do something just a little bit different. I'm going to be doing a two-parter. And why am I talking about this particular game? Well, this month happens to be the 10th anniversary of the forming of Red Storm Entertainment, and Tom Clancy's Politica is the very first game that Red Storm Entertainment ever produced. And the other reason I want to talk about the game is that I was the lead designer on it, and I'll go into a little bit more detail about that when I actually start talking about it. So what else has been going on? Well, I actually sat down and played a game of Chill Blackmorn Manor recently. It had been a while, and the rules are very, very confusing, but the game is still pretty fun. I do have a question for anybody out there. If you remember whether, when you're placing the first set of tiles, whether you're only supposed to be placing outside tiles, or if you can place the manor tiles as well, that would be a good clarification. We just use the garden tiles, which worked out, and I'm having a hard time imagining how the manor tiles would have worked out, because you could have had doors that went off the board. But in any case, it was a rather confusing game, but I think everybody had fun, and they're at least willing to give it one more try. Other new things is the website just keeps getting overhauled from time to time again. I have added a Podcast Pickle link up there. If you want to, please go to Podcast Pickle and vote for my show. The great thing about Podcast Pickle is that you don't have to do it every month, unlike other places. Just do it once, mark me as a favorite, and move on. I've also added a link to the Frapper map, so if you want to go there and add a little marker indicating where you are in the world, it'd be great to know. I have a couple of people who actually discovered the Frapper map. I created it a long time ago, and only now I've gotten around to put it on the webpage, because only now have I gotten to the point of creating a webpage with the two columns on either side. So thank you for adding that stuff to those listeners, and if there's anybody else who wants to throw in their name in there, it'd be great. I did get a few corrections come in on the Halloween games, but I'll cover that when I talk about feedback at the end of the show. One other thing, you might be wondering why I'm doing a two-parter on this one. Well, what happened was that I recorded it, and it came in longer than half an hour, and I've pretty much decided that I want to keep the show under half an hour. So rather than do one show every 2 weeks, which is half an hour to 45 minutes long, I decided I'd rather have two shows over the same course of time. As listeners, if you think that's a bad idea, do let me know. This one's going to go like this because I don't want to leave people in the suspense, but just let me know. All right, after this brief message, we'll get to the discussion of the good stuff about Tom Clancy's Politica.
It's the PAX. The G23 Paxilon Hydrochloride.
It went out on a broad wave, sir. Everyone who wants it has it.
You need to control this damage. Start a discrediting campaign to deal with these.
Sir, we feel you should know. There are other projects.
Get ready.
I would like to introduce myself. I am Gerald, your hostage.
To live at the edge.
What do you mean he's dead?
Just because I ain't a nice person, Sugar, doesn't mean we can't deal.
This attack wasn't random. Selected.
Surviving in the verse has never been harder.
You'll make a fine Alliance officer someday.
For a brown coat like you. After Serenity, the ongoing campaign, the story has a new season.
What do you mean he's dead?
Hey, what do you guys mean? Is he dead?
Is he dead?
He's dead, isn't he? What do you mean by that?
AfterSerenity.com.
As I mentioned, Tom Clancy's Politica was the first game published by Red Storm Entertainment. It was published in 1997, and it came out in a board game version and a computer version which ran on both the PC and the Mac. The game itself was actually written in Java. And as I mentioned, I was the lead designer and lead engineer on the project. I'm not going to talk too much about the computer version of the game, because I think there's enough to talk about in the board game version. Before I get into talking about the game, it might be a good idea to justify why I'm doing this. After all, Politica is not a highly rated game on BoardGameGeek. I don't really think it's a highly rated game much anywhere. I mean, there are certain people who really like it, but overall, as an average, I have to admit, it's not a very popular game. Well, there are a few reasons. First of all, I think of this as a lesson to any aspiring game designers. I originally had conceived of this as an essay for the Games Journal, which was going to be titled How Not to Design a Game. I'm going to be a little more positive than that here, but the general lesson still stands. A lot of the things that we did, there are things to learn from here. And actually, I'm also doing this for myself as a way of reviewing the mistake that we made, and so I can do better the next time. There is a certain amount of catharsis here. I mean, it was 10 years ago, but still, the fact that we did spend a lot of time working on this game, and it wasn't as well received as we thought it was going to be, it's good to work through these things and try to figure out what went wrong. And finally, this is my show, and I'm going to talk about things that interest me, and this is one of the things that interests me. So if you don't like it, sorry. Tune in next time. I would like to point out that I'm not going to treat this as a defense of the game. As I said, I'm going to try to talk about what went wrong. I am going to talk about some of the things I think we did right. I suppose you could think of that as some sort of defense. I would also like to point out, as a way of a disclaimer, this is not the way that we do things now at RedStorm. Obviously, 10 years have gone by, our processes have changed. We're now part of a large multinational corporation, which has put its own processes on us. And so things are a lot smoother now. This was our first game, so keep that in mind. I'm going to talk about some of the things we did right and some of the things we did wrong, and then kind of wrap up with some conclusions after that. Probably should leap in with a description of the game so that you know, those of you who are not familiar with it, will know what I'm talking about. The idea is that in the late 20th century, Boris Yeltsin suddenly dies, leaving a power vacuum in Russia. And you play one of eight factions who are trying to take over, trying to fill that power vacuum. These factions are the Russian Orthodox Church, the Communists, the KGB, and yes, I know they were called the FSK. We called them the KGB because most Americans know who the KGB are. They don't know who the FSK is. The Mafia, the military, the ultranationalists, the centrists, or reformers, as they became known, and the separatists, which are basically ethnic groups in Russia trying to break away. Think Chechnya. And the way that the power is represented in the game is by influence tokens, board of the entire map of Russia, broken into 23 spaces. And on each space, you place three tokens, the color of which indicates which player has influence in that space. So if you have two tokens of your color in that space, then you have what's called majority control. And if you have three tokens of your color in that space, then you have complete control. In the final game, that didn't make much difference. But in earlier versions, there were variants where you could get more money or get more power based on majority or complete control. And the object of the game is to go around the board and change these influence tokens to be your color so that you have the largest number of influence tokens on the board. And then, at the end, you will be the ruler of Russia. This is done by moving one of two political representatives around, and then picking a token to challenge, and then you buy dice, essentially. The defender will get a certain number of dice, and the attacker will spend money to buy dice, and then they roll dice together, and whoever has the highest total wins the challenge, and if the attacker wins, then he can replace the defender's color with his own color. That's kind of the general sense of how the game works. There are five phases. There's a production phase, which is very much like Settlers of Catan. There is a deck of cards, which has a bell curve distribution in it. Some spaces will come up more than others, like Moscow, Siberia, and Sakha, also known as Yakutsk, to those Risk fans out there. So you turn over the cards in the production deck, and there are three spaces marked on each card. And if you have influence in one of the three spaces, then you get money. Mixed in there are some event cards that can affect production or affect attacks for the entire turn, things like that. the standard, you know, affects everybody kind of stuff. Then you move your representatives around. There are also these pieces called uprisings, which kind of act like moving spaces, and they block production in particular spaces. Again, think the robber from Settlers of Catan. You can detect the influence here. It's not hard. Then you can trade with players, and pretty much you can trade anything you want. You can trade tokens, you can trade action cards, which I'll get to in a minute. You can trade money. You can't trade favors, you have to trade concrete things. And at this time, you can set up alliances with other players, which means that their tokens on the board act pretty much like your tokens, so they can act for you in defense. The number of tokens that you have in a space is the number of dice you get to defend with. So if you have only one token, you only get one die to defend with. So if you have an ally and the ally has a token in that space, then you'll have two dice to defend with, better defense. And you can only have one ally at a time. And then come the challenges, and you can challenge in spaces, or you can try to take over. There's, again, tokens in these uprisings that you can try to take over. If you have a token in uprising, it just means you can move it, pretty much. And then finally, you have a chance to buy action cards at the end. And action cards are the usual kind of cards. You can play them on yourself to help yourself with attacks, or with getting more money for yourself, or you can play them on other players to take stuff from them, or to screw up their attack, and things like that. And that's pretty much the game. There is one thing about the movement, which I'll talk about a little bit later, which I think is kind of interesting. Okay, so let's get into it. It is tradition in postmortems to talk about the good stuff first, so I'm going to do that. I think the first good thing about the game is one of the first things that I did, which was to do a lot of research on Russia. And I used a number of sources for that. There was a website called Russia Today, which was my daily friend. I'd go there and find out what's going on in Russia right now. There was a book called Russia 2010, which was attempting to predict what the situation in Russia would be in the next 15 years or so. Remember, this was back in 1996. There was another book called, I think, Reconstructing Russia, which was describing the situation in Russia at that time. So what was Russia like under Boris Yeltsin? What were these reformers like, these new capitalists? And of course, there was Tom Clancy, who was a big help. We would sit down with him, and we'd say, okay, well, here's what we have so far. What can you, you know, suggest in terms of adding flavor, in terms of, you know, is there some aspect of Russia that we haven't explored? So he helped a lot in that aspect. And there were some other people who came in and talked to us about various negotiating techniques and the state of things in Russia and things like that. So we had all of those resources. And all of that, I think, really contributed to providing a solid theme for the game. If you look at the cards in the game, all of them have been influenced by some sort of news event that I'd uncovered on Russia Today, or some sort of flavored event that could actually happen. There's one called Telephone Lines Cut. And that was based on a true story where people had actually stolen telephone lines for the copper inside, and because they were so poor, they wanted to sell the copper. And then there are these special abilities for each of the factions, which again I'll get into a little bit later, which some people don't think quite work, but at least they do add a flavor to the game. Each faction has a different flavor to themselves, and the ability fits what the faction is. And so at least for myself, I think, you know, this is one of those games where you sit down and you want to play with a Russian accent, because the flavor of the game really comes out. Another thing I really liked about the game is the production method. And yes, I know, I've pretty much admitted that I got the production method from Settlers of Catan. But let me just defend myself here. Yes, it's from Settlers of Catan. But Settlers of Catan, and even Settlers of Nuremberg, which has cards, is still using a random distribution based on the roll of two dice. What I saw was, well, there's no reason why it has to be based on the roll of two dice. You can make up any probability distribution and program that into a set of cards, which is what I did for Politica. Maybe I'm tooting my own horn a little too much, but I think that was a pretty cool thing. The other thing I liked about it is that I sat down and spent a lot of time to make sure that there was enough money in the game for everybody throughout the game, and that scaled from 3 to 8 players. It's one of the few things that did scale from 3 to 8 players. And it's also one of the things I get a little concerned about when people say they try to play it 2 players and it didn't work. Well, I say, well, of course it didn't work because the game wasn't designed for 2 players. You're not going to have enough money with 2 players. But I did spend a lot of time trying to figure that out. The original production model for the game was, well, you get money at the end of your turn, and quickly discovered, well, you didn't quite have enough money. What would happen is that people would attack one person, drain them of all their money, and then everybody could go around and take free shots at them. The original defense model was you'd throw in money to defend yourself. So then we switched it to you got money on everybody's turn, but then everybody had too much money because you would get money for every token that you had on the board. And then it became you get money for every majority you have on the board. And it was very hard to actually control how much money each person got throughout the game. Whereas with this new probability distribution, it was pretty easy to do this. Yes, you're going to lose tokens and spaces throughout the game, but on average, you can kind of predict how much money each person is going to have, or at least how much money is going to be out there in the game. So that's the production model, and like I said, I'm pretty pleased with that. I think that worked pretty well. Another game mechanic I liked was the movement. In the original game, movement was you move one space at a time. So you'd have your two representatives, and you could only move them one space. And the game was pretty static. You couldn't move across the board quickly, you couldn't respond to attacks on the other side of the board, and things just kind of moved slowly. What we came up with was, instead of, you know, we had a couple of ideas out there. It was like, all right, well, maybe you can pay money, you can move through other people's spaces. Or maybe, you know, you can pay money and catch an airplane, or you have cards that allow you to move farther. The idea we came up with was, well, maybe you can just move freely through your own territory. Kind of like, yeah, you have your own supply lines, as it were. If you're blue and you start in blue, then you can move freely through blue until you get to a space which doesn't have a blue token in it, and then you have to stop. So that was, I think, a nice way of making the movement across the board very dynamic, and also gives you a reason to maintain control in certain spaces. The board is very horizontal, and there are some spaces in the middle that can act as choke points. So if people manage to shut you out of those spaces, then you can't move across the board quickly, and then you have to go there and try and reestablish some control. So it added a nice dynamic there. So yeah, another thing I really liked was that movement system. I like the notion of the shared power. And yes, I know this isn't an original idea. I'm not claiming that it is. There's lots of games that have influence cubes out there that you can just kind of throw in there. And people get benefits depending on whether the majority or minority. Or maybe they just get benefits because they have a presence in that space. But in the case of Politica, it really helped the game feel like a political game. In the original design, one person had control of a space, and it felt a little too much like, well, armies, as it were. And moving to this shared control really gave it that political flavor. Back in movement, I mentioned the board. I'm really pleased at how the board turned out. I think that was one of the happy accidents. In the one of the original versions, we did a board which was just the western half of Russia. And I took all these states and the republics and kind of just made them each an individual space. And that board had a lot of spaces on it. And it really wasn't a very interesting shape. It was just kind of a big blob. That got some negative comments from the playtesters. So I went back and I said, all right, well, we'll just take the full map of Russia, and we will start combining these spaces together into kind of regions of similar quality. Like the Chechnyans, they have their own ethnic identity, which is not Russian per se. And we're going to kind of combine them together into six separatist regions. Or all of the regions around Moscow, we're going to combine them together into one big super region called Moscow. And that ended up a board which had 23 spaces, and as I said, had these nice choke points in it, and also provided, you know, I could say, okay, this region is a high production region because it has lots of oil, or it has lots of grain, or things like that. So it really, really gave, again, it added to the flavor, and it provided for some interesting connections between spaces. So that was a happy accident. I mean, it didn't have to work out quite that well. And the final thing I want to mention as something good was the people who worked on it. We had a really tight core team, and we did work a lot of hours. We did have our moments of fun. There was a time we went out for Origins. At Origins, we had a booth in the corner by the doors there, and we would spend all day there talking over microphones, trying to sell the game, getting people to come up and play the computer version, trying to get people to sign up for the playtesting sessions. Do that all day long, and then we would go to a restaurant and have a blast that night. We had a great time going to Schmitz, the German restaurant, listening to Oompa music and just relaxing after the day. So there's a lot of good memories there of the fun times that we had. And it was just a good group of people that all contributed something to the game, whether it be the design or the look or the concept. Let me just throw out some names here really quickly. There was Scott Williams, who was the other programmer in the game. I was the lead programmer in addition to being the designer. Doug Oglesby was the main artist. Steve Cotton did the animations for the game. Let's see, John O'Brien was a programmer who came on later, worked on the AI. Garner Halloran was someone who helped playtest the game, just kind of sat in the room. He was actually brought on for the project following Politica, but there wasn't much for him to do, so he helped playtest Politica at the end. Speaking of playtesting, Paula Giardana was our QA analyst, and she did a great job of trying to nail down and keep the game consistent. And then we had a couple of producers on the project. There was Frank Bozeman, who started off on the project. He was actually VP of production, so when he brought in another producer, Kevin Perry took over full-time. So Frank could actually go and do the job that he was supposed to be doing. Let's see, so many other people. Stuart White, who was basically our only tech support guy at the time, and he actually helped run the Politica tournament. Oh, yes, and Carson Holding, who was actually helped get the board game out onto the market. So thanks to all those people, and without them, Politica wouldn't exist. Okay, so that concludes the discussion of the things that went right with Politica. I will be back next week with a discussion of the rest of the things, basically everything that didn't quite go so well, next week. And I will be right back after this message with some feedback.
All games considered promo, take one. Carol, you max out on charisma while Chris and I play a drop of Nelson's blood.
Wait, what's this in the script about a Monty Python ripoff?
Mark, haven't these been done already?
Well, we need some kind of gimmick.
We don't need a gimmick. We just need to tell people that All Games Considered is a podcast about tabletop gaming, gamers...
And gamer culture.
Gamer culture.
Just go with it.
Yeah, we talk about board games, role-playing games, ways to improve your game. Might even help you save a little cash with cheap gaming tips.
And other little-known games people may want to try.
And we can always point out neat conventions to go to.
Good. Keep going.
And I suppose they can find that information along with the RSS feeds, Frapper map and forum links, and show notes on allgamesconsidered.blogspot.com.
And?
We're part of PEN's Gaming Podcast Network and Goblin, the Gaming Broadcast Network.
Right, but how do we work the Mythic Heroes journey into that?
Never mind. Just listen to the show.
Well, feedback was a little limited in the past few weeks. I'm not entirely sure that everyone got the Dragon Quest episode. What happened was that I threw up the Dragon Quest episode. Makes me sound like I'm vomiting. I thought it was better than that. Then soon after, I threw up the Halloween episode. I got a number of comments on the Halloween episode, but I only got one comment on the Dragon Quest episode, and that was from somebody on Board Game Geek, which I thought was rather odd. But I do appreciate the comment nonetheless. If you didn't know that there was a Dragon Quest episode, please go check it out and give it a listen. I would appreciate any comments on it. One of the first comments that I got was from Mark Kinney at All Games Considered to let me know that you can still get Chill Blackmore and Manor. There is a company called 5440 Orphite, which has a lot of old Pacesetter stock. So you can go and pay your $50 for a copy of Chill Blackmore and Manor. I believe I commented on this on the website. I don't necessarily think it's worth $50. I actually paid about $24 for my copy on eBay, and I thought I was paying a little too much as it was. But if you want to go get it, that's the place to do it, and I'll put the link up on the show notes for that. Another comment came in from Glenn, who says, "Great episode, lots of great games for Halloween. One, very minor, correction, Intruder, while it can be played co-op, was primarily designed as a solitaire game." And he says also, "Coincidentally, I was listening to this episode while playing a game of Intruder, which I lost." Thank you very much for the clarification, Glenn. I kind of sloughed over that point, yes. And in fact, it is a solitaire game, and it's just that you can play it as a team game. And that was about it for feedback for the last two shows. Like I said, there was also the message from the guy on Board Game Geek who basically said, yeah, love Dragon Quest, played it a lot when I was in high school. If you have any more feedback on those, I'd appreciate it. Or feedback of any kind. I am a little concerned about iTunes 7 not quite picking up the feed correctly. I'm getting it fine both on the PC and the Mac here, but I did notice that the number of subscriptions dropped off considerably when iTunes 7 came out. And they've gone up again, but not quite back to the level of where they were before, and they've also pretty much stopped growing. Not sure what's going on there. If you are having technical difficulties with iTunes 7, do let me know. Of course, if you're having technical difficulties with iTunes 7, you may not be hearing this. In any case, if you know of someone, let me know about it. I would appreciate it. And you can, of course, get that feedback to me in a variety of ways. One of which is, of course, email at vintagejim@gmail.com. There's also Skype via username jvsquare. Or you can just go to the website and click on the Skype button there, which says chat with me. You can also leave me an audio comment. Again, there's a button there, so you can talk in your nice little headset and record something on your computer, and it'll get sent to me. You can also leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net. Or if you're a Board Game Geek fan, you can leave comments on the Board Game Geek forum or just send me geek mail there. I check all of those ways. I'm not always as quick as I would like to be when responding, but I will always respond to messages. And if I haven't responded to your message, well, send me a nasty email. That's a form of feedback, too. And thus concludes yet another nostalgic episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at Magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The next episode of The Vintage Gamer will be part two of the Politica coverage. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.